happen early, and you know, we had a mini Manco type of issue which we resolved. And just to be quite clear as to what we do, we're going to do deliberations on reports. In future, I'd like these items separated. Council files are not the same as the budget report.
You did this agenda.
No, we must keep them separate. It's a separate issue. All right. So, on that note, we've got certain apologies, haven't we? Right. Yes. Honourable MacPherson. Yes, Honourable Mantash. And then also on the closure, I just want to refer to the program, which by then will be printed for everyone. I'm sure you're aware we've had to make changes to the program. All right. So then you'll do the printing now and changes. All right. On that particular note then, with the change to that item 8:30 to 10:30, then actually two items, and then closure just at 10:30, we're going to start and just give you the new program. Hand it out with a comment. So that will be at 10:30 to 10:30. Can we have someone to propose adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Williams. Thanks, Honourable Quinn. Let's just move straight into budget. Now, the intro, as you know, I have always written that intro at the end of the report as we've gone through, so that we get, in that intro we put the thrust of where we go, etc. So that is why it remains blank until the last minute. Then page one, and I just by a show of your hands, otherwise I'm going to continue. We must indicate that this does not include your serious political input per se, because you need to discuss that in your caucuses and so on, but it's to do with the key issues that remain outstanding. So on page one, that edit is all right, and we ensure that the process through the secretary is correctly reflecting what we went through. Page two. On page two, the committee also considered the following entities, strategic and annual performance plans, and we note all of those. Did we capture all of them there? As far as I'm aware, we did. Yes. And the company tribunal and so on. Then the key issues of the solar that relates to the DTI's mandate. By now, you should be familiar with what was there. And we then move to the page three. On page three, second paragraph, we refer to radically transforming the economy and placing it on a structurally different path requires the infrastructure deficit of which energy is central to be addressed, as well as less conceptual business-labor relations. And I think that phrase captures how we want to put it. It's not one side doing X, business is directly involved as well. The 9-point plan. Number one and two. Yes. And then we've got something called three, one of our priority areas, advancing beneficiation or adding value to our mineral wealth. And what immediately springs to mind is we've been dealing with that in a colloquium right now. We've just been dealing with that issue. And, you know, I want a member of the committee, because it's not my report, to also come to the party on this. Or do you want me to give you 5 minutes to take your tea? Yeah, the tea has just arrived. Can I give you 3 minutes? Just 3 minutes, all right? We're adjourned for 3 minutes. I'm Pursuing this, or unpacking it in a colloquium which examines the issue of transfer, the impact of transfer pricing. So as what we're doing so that it becomes more current. Alright. The other thing I think, do you want to say anything about higher impact industrial policy action plan? The two are linked, of course. By going up higher, you know, on value chain, we're able to deal with it more effectively. Do you want to add anything there? It's not a policy document, but an action plan. Encouraging private sector investment. I think the emphasis is more and more on this, because government is investing. That's why we've got one of the reasons we've got a deficit. One of the reasons is the private sector investing sufficiently. That's the question you ask here. Moderating workplace conflict is leading the process with NEDLAC aimed at addressing workplace conflict. This is within the context of the issue of inequality, vulnerable workers, and improving workers' rights. The issue again with labour, which if you haven't noticed, it is coming out more and more clearly, is that if more of the profits remain within the country legitimately, there would be more money for the workers, you see. So there is a relationship there, and we need to know that relationship. Then we come to unlocking the potential of SMEs. You know, the issue here really is that is what came up, but we no longer have it. What is ETI's involvement there now, right now in this budget? What is it? Is it incentives only, Ms. Sheldon?
I'm trying to capture something.
Okay, well, capture then. Let's check with the committee. Any member of the committee, ask yourself, this is the budget for 2015-2016. First April. We no longer have this budget. We have a small business ministry. So, but I believe, and this is the question I'm asking, I believe we've got the incentives. Just mic on, please, Mike.
No, I'm trying to work on this question. Yesterday I was reading some materials from the CDI and the sub program on incentives is there. Yeah. And budgeted for the
And I think that has to be clarified. So that well, you can't go into it entirely because I think you move into it later. Is that not right, Mr. Hill? You do unpack it later on page 5, is it all somewhere? Okay. Furthermore, you say here on page 5, the small business and incentives targeted at small have been transferred. The small enterprise development and incentives targeted. So maybe the incentives have gone. We need that checked. Okay, I want to effectively check what remains with us. Does anything remain? Yes, Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, I don't know if we should also check on the IDZs, the development zones, what their relationship is with small and medium and macro enterprises. You know, there might still be a relationship between those. For instance, they could set up infrastructure just to assist those small businesses that we would be then responsible for. Thank you.
Of course, we're not only talking of IDZs. We're talking of also SEZs. What will be helpful then, Ms. Sheldon and Mr. Herman, Ms. Medina, you're not really working on the budget, are you? No, so there it is. If you can check on that relationship and also check within the minister's input and that action plan of theirs, how many SEZs were going to come about in this financial year and we? Are we all on board? Right. Now the AGOA issue. I have asked someone, is it Ambassador Israel, who will be popping in what time? At about
9:30
on that one. Because those kind of issues. And yeah, there's something very serious, I think, on the online, in the paper, you know, one of the onliners today asked the status of a goer. Can we leave this paragraph just until we get further clarity on it? Okay. And members, you know, Honourable Hill Lewis, last time we had this whole AGOA issue coming up, Honourable Hill Lewis, you will remember the DA itself thought it's a very good idea to have AGOA. Is that not correct?
Of
course. Yes. Yes. So, and so therefore, it's a unanimous view. That's the point we're making, is that the ANC would like it. IFP, we don't know yet about the ESF. So that's a very important point to keep in mind, how strongly the committee as a group feels about it. Page 5. Yes, who is that? Yeah, on the corner.
I hear in the morning's the news that there was some sort of deal on that.
Some sort of a deal on that. There's
something online.
Let's ask Ambassador Shell. Let's not preempt that. Okay, let's leave it, flag it, let's move. Right, 5. Budget vote, strategic plan, etc. The DTI undertakes its mandate by focusing on it. That's factual. You know, there's nothing to correct then. Right. Guided by the strategic plan, the DTI's budget of $9.6 billion is to aid the implementation. Is to aid or support? Let's use the word support, aimed at promoting industrial development, broadening participation in the economy. The budget is channeled to the department's various programs. So who wrote the report? Given that we're talking about financial issues, it's used the word allocated. Used, not channeled. Whenever you see the word channeled, it makes me think of that famous religious prayer, make me a channel of peace. But I know that's probably top of your minds this morning. Anyway, program 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One of the department's programs has changed. This change emanates from the establishment of Small Business Development Department, which is mandated to do X. Right. This is the transfer of some of the department's activities associated with that and that. And you know what principle is that it's following? It's following the principle of funds follow function. Please put that principle in. It's in law, that one. Funds must follow function. Hence, the reorganizing and renaming of Program 3, which was previously Broadening Participation Program, to the Special Economic Zones and Economic Transformation. Now, we may not realize it now, but this is going to be having an increasing impact on the mandate that we've got, which you do refer to in the report. Then you note here that small enterprise, yes, that's on there, and incentives targeted at small businesses and co-ops have been transferred. What is that amount then? Do we mention that amount in the report? Do we mention the amount? Please, we should. The department budget increased from $8.6 billion in 2014 to $9.6 billion, an increase of $538 million, or 6.2% in real terms. Given the inflation estimates for the next 2 years, the budget is expected to be $9.5 million in 2067, and to decline to that. Why is it going to decline? You've got a note here. Figure calculated in real terms as the National Treasury inflation estimate for the next 2 years. So are you saying that the inflation Treasury has said it's going to drop, it's going to decline? That's what they're saying. Well, come on, you guys wrote this. No, not Margaret, I'm asking you, Mr. Herman. Yes, Jason is on the budget review, but what you note there, that National Treasury says that. I think, Mr. Medina, if you can get us a budget review from our office, if you get hold of Sandiswa, I want to see that the inflation dropped. Is there another reason? Because it's a decline. It's a decline here. In real terms, given the inflation, you see you're moving from, it's gone up, it went up, all right, 2015, 2016. But then you note here in the after year, 2016-27, and a decline. So what is the decline due to, Martha Ms. Sheldon?
The decline could be a combination of inflation rates, but also a reduced allocation because of cost-cutting measures. But we'll just double-check and we'll clear the inflation figures in the report in the notice.
I know that they're cost-cutting contracts. We need to know what they are. And the reason being, we're doing the B-triple R. This is part of the B-triple R process. And we need to know at the end of the year, well, hang on, don't even think of increasing anything, because you're going to have a lower budget then. Because we've already taken a position that we're not asking for more funds now in this budget, but we are going to consider it in the out years. And what's the first outer year, 2016 or 17? So it directly affects not our position. All right, so we must unpack that. Agreed, let's move. Seeing a couple of figures here and charts is always helpful. So that's very good. Page 6. The largest share of the budget goes towards the incentive administration program. Ms. Madalani rang me this morning, sick as she is. She's actually very sick. She actually went to the hospital last week. Now she's got flu, so she's working from home to a large extent and only coming in quietly to the office. But she rang me this morning and is ready to assist, you know, on the figures. And she said that, I told her that the incentive admin program, for those of us who are not in DTI, it may sound as if it's simply pure administration. We wanted to sound a little bit more productive. So what is coming under that? Yes, Honourable Nkosi.
I think it's in the issue of the incentive development and administration, I think deals with the agencies of DTI. So it's both dispensing the incentives for economic participation and the capacity to administer that. So that's right. Mm-hmm. But we can call the person that is willing to explain it to them. Because I was going to ask, I think you spoke that you are going to tell the matter when you are discussing the outer year project proposal. But I want us to have something. That if we talk about the movement of funds or the increase of funds, we must look at this new SAC program that has been established to do the transfer of some functions into small business. Because it's 3%, I think they wanted the contribution of 3% to the social economic zone and economic transformation zone. I don't know whether you can open the second question. You can read it again. The first paragraph is page 6. Below the chart. It says the largest share of the budget goes towards the incentive administration program. The program accounts for approximately 60% of the funds.
Yeah.
It goes further and says this is followed by the industrial development program, 21%, the administration program, 7%, which is the whole administration of the department under the ministry. The trade and investment Africa program, which is 4%. Consumer and corporate investigation program, 3%. And then the special economic zone and economic transformation program, 3%. You know what the consumer is? This budget is already budgeted for this outcome that I'm talking about. Because if we have taken out the budget for small business into a department of small business, and you say shifted the allocation into the economic, special economic zone. That is something that we are saying there is a new program. small business is gone, and then there's a new program that is budgeted for at 3%, which personally I'm not satisfied with that 3%. I'm not sure what it's because of it was starting. I love how they're planning around the corner.
Yeah, but I take your point, Honorable Nkomi. Honorable Kalako?
Yes. Yeah. Sure, I agree with what Honorable Nkomi was saying. I think we must have the clarity on this. Because at the same time, we must get the reasons why, because we might think, I might think the special economic zones and economic transformation are much more important. But the department might have a reason why it is reducing it to 3%. And if we can get what is that 3% in actual terms, I have not gone to the calculation of that 3%. And also on what you are raising, I want us to go back on that effective development and administration, and then the other administration, which is when you look at that chart there. So that we get, because what Paul was raising worried me when I was reading the report and our discussions. Both interrogation of their annual performance plans and also their budget they were presented. We must know exactly, especially around these agencies of TTI. Because this is the problem of TTI in agencies. If we don't deal with agencies, we don't get correctly, so that we are able to do our oversight in the agencies chair. So I don't want to assume, I know what Honorable Bobo was saying, that administration might be incapacitating offices, equipment, or ICT, but I don't want just to take that for granted. I want us to get a thorough exactly what is that, so that these agencies we can be obvious. When we do oversight, we know where to go directly. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thanks,
Honorable
Kalonga. Honorable Matashi.
Listen, I took what Professor Turok said yesterday very seriously. And I think one, at which point are we as the class practice it is said, if there was a structure sort of that would monitor the consumption of funds wherever they go. And I want, at which point are we going to do this, because I have some reservations about some things that I've done not yet. Because budgets are allocated, and down the line you cannot, you know, tell where they have gone to. Because there will be no end product of such funds that is dispersed. And I think we must, at a cluster level, look into this.
We can, of course, also, I will take it now, we can, of course, also approach the budget office, which is available to us as a portfolio committee, and ask them, can we at least start with DTI? Can you track this through? We can. Mm-hmm. And especially if we give them notice last May and ask for it in August, you know, when we come into that particular stage. So maybe we should keep that on board. Do we agree that we adopt that position and approach the Budget Office of Parliament?
Yeah.
Okay, PBO. Right, Honourable Nkongi?
Thank you. I was going to say, in doing that, you know, I don't think when discussing this particular budget vote, we should separate the way that we have done oversight. Mm-hmm. Particularly on the usage of the monies that are allocated to the agencies. Mm-hmm. One of the outcry was the question of the cost of offices. When we went to Johannesburg in one of the big complexes there, we found that, let's say, Consumer Commission and then the credit commission.
Yeah,
they have separate offices away from each other, whereas others did not occupy the whole building. And for me, that was a wastage, you see. And then we need to check some of our recommendations that we had you know, yeah, on the oversight, and try to integrate them into this budget report.
I think that's important. It also comes back from what was repeated yesterday in terms of transfer pricing, but we ourselves have said we must synthesize. We mustn't work in each area separately, but how do they impact on each other? Agreed. So what we can do, there were responses that we asked for with respect to this budget, and it included the leases, it included this, that, and the next thing. But the challenge becomes in the end, for the budget purpose here as well, is to point out, I think, in our conclusion, that the current legal structure, the current structure of entities, some of them, which allows them to operate so independently that they themselves are able to take their own leases and sign them. We have, and I think our conclusion has to be in the light of what's been happening, that that is not a good thing. That there has to be some executive authority here. So in the conclusion, just arising out of the budget, arising on the oversight, I hope, Michelle, that you're able to capture some of these for the conclusion, not now, and needs to come in at this point. When we look at unpacking all of this, 21% incentive administration program. Where, sorry, not 21, 60. Where are the funds going? Do we break them down in the report? 10% here, 5% there. Have we broken that down in any way, Sheldon?
After this so long, is you'll add the percentage which is transferred businesses as incentives, and maybe add a economic classification paragraph, which is broadly in the DTI, and then the paragraph after that unpacks what happens with the special economic zones and economic transformation program in terms of 3%. There is a reference to the total budget of 259 million.
All right, that may address that to some extent, but also note we want comment in the conclusion on it as well. Key issues raised by the committee during its deliberations. ICAP and its impact. And ICAP was not at a stage, and I found this disturbing. The minister informed the committee, and I looked at my own notes, that ICAP was not at a stage where it's fundamentally leading to that, meaning that South Africa is moving up the value chain. The DTI is of the view that industrial policy works, and if the scope can be expanded, it can achieve greater results. You know, we need to make it clear what we are actually saying there. That the industrial policy action plan is intended to fund radically change. It is. You've already captured the reason why it's not doing it. You've just said the scope is not large enough, or what? So, what are we saying? It's just the scope? That the industrial policy action plan is intended to radically transform the economy and reindustrialize, but the problem is its scope is limited. Is that what we say? I'm asking you, Michelle. But there are two points of view. You know, the one is saying, Mr. says it's not at that stage. We it is fundamentally leading. So we may as well stop it if it's not leading me. If it's not going in that direction, we have a problem. Do you hear what I'm saying, you see? So what are we actually saying? Right.
I think nothing aspect you failed to add, we in the ministry for two, one or two examples where it was definitely working, like automotive and clothing. And that lessons need to be learned and added and enhanced in other areas. We need to upscaling of IPAP this year.
Well, maybe that's what we'd love to say, you see. Yes, Honourable Mpongi?
I don't know. I'm not sure which material you are making reference of. I don't know. Last night I just left at 1 o'clock. I was busy talking.
No.
When I went to the annual report that came to the strategic plan, I saw a particular trend from the minister to applaud the work that has been done, especially the fifth iteration of IPAP, going into the fifth. And I think we need to catch that one. That's the, you see, and then it's also accounted on what are the bottlenecks and challenges into covering the broader scope that you're talking about. But you're not even doing a good job. And that should come very sharply, you know, as to, so like that, you can look at the forward of the minister and also the director general's input or overview on both the work of the department and the entities. Thank you very much.
Why don't we capture practical examples of the achievements which in the committee both the minister and the DG alluded to? But I think that's what we must capture.
Point taken. Can he then go to resolving the energy crisis? The committee inquired about ETR's role in securing an affordable and productive sector. The minister informed that third ETR supports the energy war room. The Minister of Energy should brief Parliament in this regard. I think, this is sounds back, but the minister is part of the energy war room. Whether he supports it or not, I don't know. But he sits there, that's it. Saying the Minister of Energy should brief Parliament in this regard. I think the thing is critical for Eskom to have a proper preventative. You know, what you're saying as a committee, what was said? And from our own notes, we said three things. One, we raised this before, and we raised its negative impact on manufacturing. We've raised it. But we're also calling for innovative ways. Didiza was mentioned. Can't we look at different ways of supplementing and trying to fill the gap that we currently have? And the emphasis to green energy. So I think we ought to know, resolving the energy crisis, that do we welcome the idea or not that there is an energy war room which sits regularly to resolve this? Is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? It's probably a good thing that they're speaking together, the critical players. They are there. The problem is we also said that we need to encourage green industry in that regard, and we need to encourage, we need to emphasize the need for a proper preventative maintenance plan. Those are the three issues. So if we can look at that and deal with it, because we've told now, if you look at the papers, not that we can do the budget report from the papers, but it underlines what we're saying. There isn't really a shortage of energy per se. It's because we have to switch off to do maintenance. If we didn't have to switch off to do this huge amount of maintenance, we would have enough energy. So the critical problem here is there has not been an effective maintenance program. That is the critical issue which we know. So that's the problem. So we ought to support that, but while that is being developed and what implemented, what measures are we taking? We can't have shut down. However, government is yet to decide on shale gas unit, that's fine. You can put that lock in. But there are alternatives which has been mentioned over and over again by the DG and the minister. Mm-hmm. One of them was the issue of fuel cells or something that has been used. The other is windmills. The other is the kind of what do they call the diesel that works from that's working on gas. It's not on gas, on petroleum. Is that right? Who was there? Who was at Hooker?
I think yes, it's diesel. But the point is that we should make the point that all of these institutions should now be moved over to gas. I don't know where we will make that, but it is important to slip that.
Are we saying that? No, I'm just asking you. Yeah, I know that we've spoken of gas, but have we taken a decision that if we are moving to gas? I'm not aware of that, but I know that we're saying that gas should be used. But so are we saying wind should be used? So are we saying fuel cells should be used? Solar. The Northern Cape was powering most of its manufacturing plots with solar. So, you know, we must be careful if we say, let's shift over to gas, because I don't know that we've got enough gas. What are we saying? Come. Sterling, Miss Sheldon, yeah, oh, Sheldon. The only thing I've noted in my notes is what I've underlined here, and that is wind, fuel cells, solar, and the diesel, which I wasn't too sure what powered it. And that links up with the oversight report we did, where we said large entities should consider developing this as an alternative. So we carry on there. All right, the creation of black industrialists, what's happened here? There's a lot of money being allocated there. Whether the current legislative environment would produce and the code of good practice to support the emergence of that. Empowerment within the manufacturing sector is low, notwithstanding existing incentives. We then talk a little further on of the Director General informed the committee that the outcome of the Black Industrialist Summit would be the development of a clear plan for the creation of black-owned companies in the emerging industrial sectors. Currently, there are 40 applications. Link, yes, Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think one of the things that we have said on many occasions is that most sectors, in fact, all sectors in South Africa are white controlled. So we need to start looking, for instance, the energy sector, the clean energy, the green energy sector is brand new, and that's completely controlled by white industrialists. So we need to emphasize not only the creation of black industrialists, but the actual radical transformation of economic sectors, the ownership relations. That's what we need to look at, the ownership relations within sectors.
That would link us to triple B level E as well. Yes, Honourable Kalaka?
No, Chair, I wanted just to check if if I don't have a recognition whether the department or the minister did mention specifically which sectors of manufacturing that this program will concentrate on. The department identified. I think we should double check that.
Is that clear, Ms. Sheldon? Right, it's just clear that one. Thank you. Honourable Mkongi?
To support that, I think through which there was a sudden on the creation of the legging society, and then we can receive some of the information from the outcomes of the summit. So I'm not sure in terms of this particular report where are we going to put it, whether I'm going to put it in the forward or in the recommendation. But there are activities that took place. Secondly, from where they reported the registration of 40 companies. But such for how many companies?
What we need to do, we don't have that information yet, you see. We've got the projection of an outcome and output, but we haven't actually got the report. Now, what is possible, depending on when we get that, I mean, Mr. Herman can check with the DG when we're getting it. Are we getting it in the next week or two? If we're not getting it in the next week or two, we may get it in time for debate, and then it would simply be used in people's debates. But we can't put it in if we don't have it. Okay, so let's clarify that particular one. Verification of the BEE compliance. The status, in fact, what we need to be clear here is the committee actually expressed its concern here that the majority of companies were still way down. And if they, you know, only in the middle or below that, how are they ever going to comply with triple BEE, which is even tougher? And we saw that with Chevron, if you recall, where it took them how many years to get 5 years to shift up one notch And yet Triple B is a tougher program. And I think we've got to note that we did express a concern here on the effective and accelerated implementation in that. We just, I don't know what the stumbling block is, but the issue has to be that we should begin to re-engage on that front, because that's very important. Honourable Williams?
Thanks, Jefferson. Yes, I agree. We should look not just at the verification of BE compliance, but the effectiveness, because recently we've had reports of BE compliance, and yet at the end of it, after a few years, suddenly those people that have benefited from that suddenly stop benefiting because of the companies that have been complying are using, I don't know, dodgy mechanisms in order to reduce that. So we must have an effective compliance, like you said. So I think we should emphasize effective compliance.
Perhaps in a conclusion, when we look at the three critical issues we're going to be faced with this term, we're going to be really exercising oversight on the entities, for a particular purpose, triple B, double E, effective compliance, and it is going to ensure also that the IPAP is finally really working within this expanded scope and addressing the impediments to it. So we need to focus on those three, but of course not to forget the trade. We often forget the trade like a Cinderella, and I mean, it's trade and industry, where are we? The status of the investment pipeline.
On the verification.
Yeah.
Since the verification now is moved from South African National Accreditation System.
Yeah.
And then there is this element now of introducing auditing of the governments for compliance under the National Treasury. I think in the recommendation for when we conclude is to ask how far is the process now with the national, so that I get back that support on how far is the process of setting up auditing and auditing profession at that amendment.
Michelle, did you want that? Did you, because your hand was up?
There is some clarity required on whether or not the verifications in fact actually been removed from that. We'll just follow up on that. Because as far as I know, the Auditing Profession Act hasn't been amended specifically include the yet. So it might still be within that.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's called under finance, you see. So we need to point that out. And this is the whole point about committees working in synergy, not just the departments, so that we get that done. So you'll follow that up. Right. The investment pipeline. The relationship with foreign direct investment and capital outflows that was made yesterday was quite informative, you know, looking at that relationship there. And if we had less capital outflows, foreign direct investment may well be sufficient. We should just raise this relationship that does exist. The moment is reflecting the official statistics of the United Nations doubling to 88 billion. Well, you could argue that that's to double your investment is excellent in a year. You know, that's one approach. And then it is looking at the different companies and so on, and that the special economic zones, Cooker, Richards Bay and Forgana, have attracted a number of investors. It would have been helpful in this budget support if we were more concrete. You know, investors is such a broad term. How much investment has been attracted there? Is there any way we can get that, Michelle?
Well,
Encouraging domestic investment, the productive sector is critical to place South Africa on a trajectory of positive growth, not driven by consumption. That's one of the basic principles of where we're going. Ministers of the view that the availability of incentive packages should encourage such investment. It goes on, and this has fueled a decision to support a number of smaller applications. The concern which was expressed to a committee by the department, and is reflected in the media from time to time, is that we appear to have virtually used up the allocation, if not used it up. And we may just need, at this point, when you know that, how much is actually left of that investment for the financial year? Because we mustn't encourage people to apply for this year, and in actual fact, it's going to be to say no, then come back next year. So what is the reality here? Okay? Thanks, Honourable Conkey.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I think we need to be very robust on this matter of encouraging domestic investment. Because I'm of the view that we have a foresee of the developmental crisis as part of the instrument to encourage domestic investment. Because if we attract a direct investment, foreign direct investment, which is disempowered domestic industry, we're going to have problems in terms of competition. So in encouraging this domestic investment, we spoke about the issue of the developmental crisis for the domestic industries. Thank you very much. I'm not sure where do we put it.
Now, I think what we have to remember is we can't put anything in the conclusion or recommendations unless it has already been mentioned in the body. So when we talk about where, it has to be in the body as a kickoff. Then it can go to one of these areas of conclusion or recommendations. Yes, Honourable Conkey.
I'm raising that,
Chairperson,
because when we had the minister in our meeting, so it's going to confuse which one, whether it was this budget vote or any other proceeding. The minister has been raising the matter of the developmental crisis, and also it has been in the public, you know, in South Africa, it has been part and parcel of the discourse. So I think we need to capture it somewhere on the encouragement of domestic investment. Thank you very much.
When the DGI thought, you know, making a sense of use, the DGI informed that most of the major work was done internally. We also alluded to trade missions that require that company. You allude to, all right, that companies are soaked rather. Approval to end of the use of consultants requires the relevant division to motivate for the need, all right? Furthermore, consultant fees are regulated by national treasury. So here we are, fees are regulated. Advertising, what is the allocation in terms of the budget, Ms. Sheldon, for consultants? Yeah, will you just check on that? Advertising budget. Okay, just sorting out, just let me put this off for a second. What I think may be useful, Ambassador, is Deborah, if you could come on this side. The committee should really be sitting in the front as far as possible. Can they capture it for the general public on the parliamentary channel? We don't even see your face because you're sitting behind on the clock of Williams and the corridor. Now, Comrade Honourable Natasha has left. You're having to go to Labour. And in Denver, you're sitting in Denver's place, you see that's the thing. And we want Denver to be able to. We need to see if this one is not the bottle in the Thank you.
Just during that process, we got Ambassador Faisal Ismail, who just arrived. We're just almost finishing this report, and then if you were coming at the end, Ambassador, I hope you've got half an hour. Thank you. The advertising budget, the Director General informed the committee that there has been criticism in the market that ETI and its incentive program were not limited.
and that was inaccessible. In order to address this, the DTI developed a DTI to the People program at Cape Town. And we also got Grand South Africa, didn't we? Proudly South Africa. So that was useful. Although some of you may have seen more recently on all the apps from yourself that Grand South Africa is pointing out that a former employee is no longer there but still claiming to be there. So we must always check the raw sources of material on it. Some of us should note here that DTI, this advertising budget, marketing budget, it's advertising and marketing, they've actually done a lot recently, huh? And you see that on TV. I've never seen so much about DTI on TV as I have been seeing this year. I see all of the, what do you call them, the technical infrastructure entities are there, as well as like NCR, Consumer Commission. It's the first time they've been there. So they clearly are aware that they've got to do something. Yes, Honourable Condi?
And let's not forget, the outreach program of the Minister and the Department of Trading Industry, they call it Take Trading Industry, Take DTI to the People.
Yes. Yeah, it's in here, the DTI developed a DTI to the People program. So it's big, and I think that's a good thing. Page 8. And what we need to say here, I think, colleagues, we need to be able to say the committee welcomed it because it is the first time they've done it and it is welcome. Let DTI become known as positive. Okay? Now we go to entities reporting to the minister directly. And the CRPC established, and of course we had a lot of information in that direction. And then we move to page 9 because that is just noting what they do. You see here, which is important, this mandate on page 9, after the bullets at the top, mainly aligns with the Department of Trade and Industry's strategic objective to create a fair regulatory environment that enables investment, trade, and enterprise development in an equitable and socially responsible manner. When we check with CRTC, we need to, is this an equitable, socially responsible manner to do X, whatever X is? So it is a question that you have to ask. Strategic plan, it's got 3 outcome-orientated goals. The one is competitiveness, knowledge base, and the broader formal economic participation. The question we have to ask ourselves is, how effective has the service delivery been? CRPC, how effective? And it does mean the committee should need to evaluate and put the issue in. The committee welcomes certain things that it has succeeded in. Go to the bottom paragraph. In response to the issue of the simplification of the registration process, the commissioner informed the committee that currently there were ongoing. Was this the commissioner or was it the deputy commissioner? Those are members of the commissioner coming. Yeah. Just make sure, okay. For example, SARS may register companies as part of the value and tax registration and also allow companies to submit. An IT system should then be developed that would enable agencies to access and pass on the required information. This will be an attempt to enhance compliance. So we note the relationship with SARS that has been pursued. It's not there. It's simply being pursued. The CRPC informed the committee that it was not the position to provide accurate figures with respect to deregistered companies, but would increase its capacity. So there's a problem there. It doesn't have capacity in a very important area, the deregistration of companies. At the time, SAFSEA has been dealing with the last bulk deregistration process with the intention to do this on a monthly basis. I think we need to note there that the committee intends to track this, monitor this. We can't just leave it there. We'll have to wait till next year. Honourable Nkongi?
Well, thank you, Sir President. I don't think the Chinese Legislative Assembly is only the capacity of the registration. There are just some that are not have the capacity to enforce transformation at the point of registration by company. We read that matter sharply, and then we must conclude, because we can't be found wanting in terms of the compliance with the PE code and so forth, if SISPI was very strong and doing its own work. So they just register companies that are really wide and leave transformation, you know, one sheet. So they must tell us at the point of registration. You can't, in 1990, let's say 2009, you are registering your wife on the company, and it's ridiculous. So I think we need to follow up that matter and recommend what this should do in terms of. So I'm submitting that it's not only a matter of your registration, it's also on the capacity to register companies.
I think what I noted your hand there, Honourable Colonel, but on page 11, Honourable Nkongi, we directly deal with the broader transformation agenda.
Right.
On page 11, and it's not sufficient that we've got there, and so the points you are making, we need to note there, that's what I'm saying. The points you've made should be located here. That's all I'm saying. Okay, I'm not saying we're not using them. They need to be in a different position, that's all.
Okay.
And it's very valid. Yes, Honourable Colonel?
I think we just should make distinction. You know, sometimes you will have a company when you register a company just for the purpose to be another juristic person, just to own a property, not to do in business. So I don't think there can be a blanket situation like that SIPSI cannot register a company if it's a so-called white company, only white company. You know, it all depends what company is going to do. I think we should just
leave. Now look, I do take your point. We know that the trust was seen as one of these strange animals which the government did decide, look, trusts have a purpose and are very valid, particularly in personal matters. You have a family, loses father and mother, you want to trust the kids, or in a sports foundation, or in a... Yes, they have their purpose trusts. But unfortunately, 15 years ago, and maybe 20, everyone formed a trust just to get rid of, out of it being seen as making money or whatever. So there was an encouragement to go and register yourself as a company. Now, I take the point you're making, Honourable Colonel, that I want to buy a property and let me just register it as a company. In other words, it's become two of you dealing in that. And there may be a point for us to look at that issue. But what we're looking at here is companies commercially, as it were. And that has to be confirmed. That's the first group. When we move into the others, it becomes secondary. So I don't think we're saying that, you know, if your house is in a company, as a company, you can't have it. So we'll just note that there is a need for SIPSI to directly interrogate the directors within the company. And that also prevents fronting. You can see, there was a lot of fronting going on as well. All right. So let's try and phrase that appropriately so Ms. Sheldon can slot it in. I don't know if you get the point, Honourable Hildes, because I see you looking puzzled there for that.
No, I just want to know what you mean by when you say let's interrogate directors. You mean just check the veracity of their documents?
Yeah, that's right. We don't want the fronting to crop up there. You know. So we can't just say, oh, well, I'm there, and by the way, we need a family woman, and this and that, and the next thing. It becomes a mechanical exercise, or tick box compliance. Instead of complying with the spirit and purpose, I think that's what we're getting at. So we need to put something together, because we're not doing that. We're not, and we need to. So interrogate may be the wrong word to use, but we have got it examined more effectively. Yeah. Honorable Mkongi?
I think you need to go back and think about this sort of things too. So.
Yeah.
And try and look at some of the things. But in our public hearings, this week and last week and the week before the last, we've been dealing with the non-compliance in terms of the data in the mineral mining industry. And then the question of ownership, the question of management and so forth has been an issue. And since the mining charter was established, 26% is not yet reached. And this quick crisis started, I think even lessons and so forth. And this becomes a crisis. So I'm raising this in that particular context.
I think on the bottom Congi, let's put it in that context as an example. That's what we're saying. So it's quite clear because this is going through. Nobody's checking it. Nobody. Thank you, Honorable
Kalako. I don't know what I was going to suggest. I think the approach that we must raise this is the scientific project so that it's clear to all of us. I understand where we come from, but my question in my mind, I know what this emanated and is based on our broad transformation agenda and policies. In all spheres of life. But my what I'm grappling with in my mind is if a white person opens up a company or invests something, opens up a company and registers it, are we forcing that white person because it's white to actually have automatically help people? That's what I'm grappling with, but I'm taking this as an example.
No.
But I know what we're dealing with at the back of our mind is what we have passed 21 years ago and have not been happening broadly. Because I watched Honorable Mkongi saying happens also in companies dealing with our entities. Which is what we've experienced throughout the presentations in colloquium around mineral mining dealers. Definitely sure it happens also if we can go to manufacturing. We will discover exactly what we're talking about. That our achievement and goals which were put there for manufacturing, for transformation, it might not have happened. We might be hitting a regular, not wrong. With a lot of time we get it. So, in my mind, I have this. So are we forcing white people let's read this and have a discussion.
Now, I hear what you say, Honorable Kalaka, because no, we're not saying that, as you know. But the point has to be made that the transformation, radical transformation, is not happening. And all the entities must pursue that. So I think we will look at this very carefully. Sheldon, Mr. Berman, okay. And let's just flag that one. And I'm coming here now looking to the Swedish model. You know, the Swedish model popped up 3 years ago, two and a half. And I mean, it was seen as the going to take us forward rapidly and accelerate this, that, and the next thing. And it seems to have been an albatross rather than the seagulls that soared. Now, I'm a bit worried about this. And I think to myself, do I personally know exactly what the Swedish model is? Yes, I do have an idea. We've had 2 hours of it being unpacked 2 years ago. But members sitting here, most of us here, cannot have that model unpacked. You know, the Swedish model in 60. And ever since we got the Swedish model, we seem to have become very un-Swedish. So I think that we do need to note here that we are concerned. We are. And what the Commission intends doing is actually to unpack the Swedish model and how effectively it is contributing to X, whatever X is that objective. And I think that is very pertinent at the moment, okay? However, due to the call center license, licenses only been received in March, okay? The system has been upgraded in April, was expected to be in operation by 2013, but the point is it's not fully in operation. You see, that is the problem. So, you know, Michelle, then I want you to look at the Swedish model here. We were given this and told this is going to solve all the problems. But we're sitting with the same problems. Is it operational, as we talked? Is it? The Sheldon, is it operational?
It has been. What's happened since our oversight visit was that there was an intention to revert back to a traditional call center, and we were waiting for feedback on whether or not that had happened. So we'll just need to...
Yeah, I mean, before I take further hands, Michelle, you need to look at that from the oversight report. Where are we?
Okay. There's an indication that they should be reversing back to the traditional call center on the 1st of June.
And then why? You know, why hasn't the Swedish model worked? We can't just put this in. People want to know, well, why are you moving away from that expensive Swedish model? That costs a lot of money. The model costs a lot. All right. No? No, I'm aware of that, but it doesn't stop the fact that we allocated a lot of funds to the purchase and implementation of the Swedish model. And now we're going back. So people will want to know what happened to the Swedish model. Please. I would like to just quickly shift to the high vacancy rate. You know, that has, the committee has raised this. SIPSI informed the committee that vacancies which fall outside the bargaining structure had been fulfilled. A delay in resolving the labour matters has an impact on delivery. I'm asking myself why we are not, oh, you put the CCM here, here. At the conclusion of this process, I hardly declared it as soon as the matter was referred to the CCMA. Okay, because that is our position as a committee, that it is at the CCMA. Where agreement was reached to place a moratorium on recruitment at the lower level until certain aspects, with an S, had been addressed. Until certain aspects had been addressed. It is within the context of CIEC, the CIEC informed the committee they are seeking to fill vacancies as it is critical to the functioning. Well, since this report was done, the budget report, we are aware that the commissioner resigned. Now, you've got to know that it's happened during this budget process, you see. So somewhere along here, you've got to know that that has happened. And if we get a further update, we'll update it. All right. Customer and stakeholder survey. We've got that one. Status of the linkage between CRPC. What is happening now that when a company registration is lodged, the data is immediately forwarded to SARS? What is happening currently is that when a company registration is lodged, the data is immediately forwarded. So that is already the first part of the process. You need at that point, now the role, we spoke about that, Honourable Mpongi, transformation. Just maybe we need to, you know, ask you to develop a paragraph that we can look at so that we can slot it in there for transformation. And also, Honourable Kalapa, you know, the issue of companies and who should own them, etc., etc. What is the ANC actually saying in that regard? By the ANC, I mean the government. And is that the prevailing situation? The rationale behind business rescue, is it working? We were told that it has been working. Remember the information we were given? The CRPC informed the committee that the report is commissioned. Okay, Honourable
Mkongi. No, I'm not interested in them. Page 11, why in page 11, the role of CC in the corrupted transformation, you've read this thing before.
You have?
No, I thought you raised it when they were presenting.
You did? No, there is information. You know what we're suggesting? That instead of putting it earlier, we put it all together. That's what we're saying. Are we agreed there?
Yeah.
This issue of the business rescue, remember we raised a number of questions in that regard. How do we know if it's working or not? And the issue being raised, do they just want to liquidate to keep the shareholders happy? Then you know, or not liquidate, some liquidate because that others go into business risk to try and save the workers as well as the company and shareholders. What was the purpose of business rescue? And you need to look at that purpose when it came into that. The purpose was, because companies employ people, we must try and ensure they can carry on as far as possible. So if they get into difficulties, how do we assist? And it came about really when we looked at the situation in the Western Cape with respect to the textiles that can't first arose. The other issue is, how do companies contribute to the economy? The idea being that they can contribute very significantly, therefore we need to rescue them if possible. The third thing is, why do people go into liquidation at the drop of a hat? Now, I walk out with my money, with my business, and everyone else gets dumped. So you should not be allowed to just automatically pursue liquidation. So it was to actually bring about a more equitable, fair business climate in the country. And you need to look at that. What is an effective? And there were some outstanding questions, Mr. Herman. Have we got the responses to those questions? But are we going to hand this out? Okay. So we must just watch that. Honourable Kongi?
Well, I want to propose something. I want to go to the paragraph that says at the forefront of the business rescue process. The deadline.
Yeah, I'm with you.
From below.
Mm-hmm.
To say, we cut and paste that one and put it as a first paragraph. But we say the purpose of the...
The purpose of the business rescue process is X.
Yes, as outlined in
the mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Then we can go down.
All right. Improving the ICT infrastructure. Sorry?
There were issues, I'm not sure how I would raise this, that you have raised in this matter on the principles and policy of business rescue. One of them that you have raised is the matter of reckless activities that takes place in businesses that make businesses to collapse. And I'm not sure the words that we use, there were words that we use that were describing the nature of some reckless businesses that people are running in this country. And when they collapse, it becomes the responsibility of the government to rescue those companies because of bad business decision-making processes. So I want us to contextualize that matter and not leave it out.
Well, the issue was raised. I don't know if anyone else has a comment on that particular one. I don't see any other hands coming up. The improvement of ICT infrastructure. That's why I wanted to know how much the cost of the Swedish ICT was. Performance bonus policy.
Sorry,
that's the one. Oh yes, Honourable
Lewis. One thing that I did recall on the CIPC was that the committee expressed this unhappiness with the fact that the CIPC was stopped, would not report to us any further on call waiting times. And if I remember correctly, the committee was unanimous in the view that even if they didn't put it in their annual report, they should still report to this committee on what the call waiting times were.
No, I think that needs to be recapped there. Sheldon? You heard, yeah. Honourable Nkongi?
Is it a question? I thought Honourable Nkongi was going to raise that matter. That also we had a problem in their own ICT in terms of the usability of the illicit food. I'm not sure you put it correctly, but there is a penalty. They say people should be taught how to lock in the other system and use it properly. You see, and with the cancer matter, very, very, very important. That what is not user friendly.
Oh yes, that's right. I think the point has been raised repeatedly. On the one hand, we want to become very electronic and we want to move up. On the other hand, you can't forget half the population. You know, how do we balance the two requirements? And I think the other issue that was also raised when we were in Pretoria on the Overstyne, some of you will recall, where this electronic external system in a mall. Great, great, but people had been there since 6 in the morning queuing, and while we were there, there was load shedding. Now I think that someone had come a long, long way, probably on a bus or taxi at 5 in the morning or 4, gets there and is just about at, you know, going to be served and addressed and able to get in, when the load shedding comes in. And they then have to come back another day. And that is when issues were raised by members of the committee. Besides SARS, is it possible to link up with another entity in government? Do you remember the point made with respect to rural areas, etc.? And we may want to note that if we're going to encourage more participation from the majority of the people in our country, then we may need to look at some of the challenges they face in that regard. In the first of performance bonus, organisational, etc., the draft performance bonus policy has been presented to organised the Labour as part of a consultation process. We've got consultants here again. The consultants are utilised for the use ICT area. I want to come back to that again before we pass this report. We're not passing anything today. Registration of companies, we are back there again. The verification of data and so on. And the move towards biometrics. Website availability, this was raised by the Honourable McPherson as a huge impediment. It's not user-friendly, apparently. And, you know, I suppose we need to put in here this point earlier or here that CRTC has taken a decision to move back, to move out of the Swedish model and to have a one-to-one call center. Is that the idea, Ms. Sheldon? Right, and I think we ought to note that here that they have now decided to go back to a traditional call centre. We need to note that. Alignment of indicators, again with the Auditor General, the website availability, and that we learn from them, the Minister has instructed should become a reality, the shift to a traditional call centre. The key issue of annual returns and the percentage. We keep on coming back to the percentage of calls taken by the call centre. So there is a need for us to say more than one line on that matter. Because people won't know why we keep on talking about call centre, the call centre. And what we really need to say is how difficult it is to get through. That's the reality to someone phoning in. Companies tribunal. So members, I need to ask you something just at this juncture, at 10 past 10. It's 10 past 10, and we want to finish with this first look at this budget, all right? We're not making decisions today, just the first look. But we need to know from the transfer pricing, which is coming to you as a rolling document, okay, here today. It may be pertinent for us to look at this rolling document, all of us, at first, time, you know, embrace it in some form and put our own comments on, and just allocate, I want to allocate only 5 minutes to that at 10:30 to make a few comments. comments about it and how it will be run. So we will run with a budget until 10:30. Right, Honourable Mkongi? You had your hand up when I see.
Did we ask CC to give us a full report on the functionality of their recent, a latest report? Because we didn't have a full report on one, the website and the call center. So we need to request the challenges and the successes of the Swedish model. Just a full report. Thank you.
Yes. Will you just give me 1 minute, please? Something as urgent as very tough on my ID.
Just 1 minute.
Yeah. Right, sorry about that. There's someone calling about referring to the call center, etc. The question arises, of course, we've been given a 5-hour presentation on the call center last year. And this is still the same committee, you see what I mean. So we need to factor that in again, and what they have said. So maybe what we've got to do is to ask members, staff, to look that up, to get it out of their computers, to get it out of what was given to us. We've had a clear indication of what the Swedish call center is, and so on and so forth. What, right now, we're at a position where you don't have a commissioner, and the minister will be addressing this, but it will be addressed after the budget. So all we can say about the call centre is what the facts are at the moment, and they are that the minister has instructed them to return to the traditional call centre because the Swedish model is not addressing the challenges, an effective response rate. It's not able to do that. And that the committee then will also engage with SIPSI. Again, I imagine we will do this probably closer to June or August. We're not going to do it in May. We've got the budget coming on, etc. So we will be monitoring it and tracking how effectively that works, the call centre. But we can't sort of just pull something out of the air as to how it's working now. We don't know how the traditional will work. It's going to come about on the 1st of June, I think, effective from. We, as I said, Ambassador, we're going to return to you at 10:30, right? We looked at the company's tribunal, page 13. The tribunal is mainly tasked with adjudicating applications in terms of the Companies Act, etc. And enhance South Africa's global competitiveness. Now this issue of competitiveness, the Honourable Mkongi raised this earlier and so did someone else on the committee, that in the transfer pricing colloquium hearings yesterday. This issue came up from AIDC on it reduces the competitiveness of companies. Do you remember that? It's in that presentation. There may be a need just to look at that and see how it can be factored in. Because look at the last line. It should lead to the creation of world-class adjudicating and dispute resolution organization that contributes to the promotion of fair and ethical business practices. So you're coming back again to the constitutional requirements here. Strategic plan. You've got the strategic plan there. The new approach, we must note that in the past we didn't resort to alternative dispute resolutions, but more and more the government is looking at that for the purpose of making it more economic and more accessible. And I think it's time we made that point here, because it is a shift. Getting things out of the regular court system where they can be resolved more economically and more speedily. All right? You're looking here where it talks about the cost. The tribunal will examine other funding options to generate its own revenue. I'm a little concerned. What other options would you get to generate your own operation? What funding? You know, what are you going to put penalties in to generate funding? I'm just asking. You see here. Therefore, the tribunal will examine other funding options to generate its own revenue. How is it expected to generate its own revenue? Is my question to you. No, that's the question we need to answer. Or are they going to start charging for certain services? Do you know what's... No one's coming up with any comments. But, you know, you need to know that it is a question that will remain with people. Key issues. Irregular expense claimed by the chairperson. Right? Cooperation of the chairperson with forensic audit investigation. We've got that here. He thought that he was fully cooperate. The only time that he would not be available was when he was required to appear in court. Current staff compliments, you've got that. 15 of the 28 positions. But I think what we need to note is that currently it is not operating at full establishment level, because they have only just started. How old is the company's tribunal? Is it 3 years?
Three.
So for 3 years old, can you expect it to be huge? You know, can you expect it to have 30 people? Or do you... And so I think that we are happy about that, aren't we? That we need to, as the committee understands, more staff would be employed as the demand increases for the work of the company's tribunal. So that's why it is part-time and set for a marketing strategy. Who's got a hand? Yeah, Honourable Elvin.
Madam Chair, just going back to the previous issue, am I correct that you asked how the company's tribunal can be funded, or where extra funding can come from?
Well, that's what it is. You see, if you look here, on page 13, that last paragraph after the bullet. While other income expectedly generated by the tribunal would be 700,000, they told us this. The tribunal noted X. Therefore, the tribunal will examine. You see, they think they will examine. And so my question is, where are you going to get the funds from? Are we going to suddenly introduce penalties? What's going to happen? It's a legitimate question, which, yes, Uncle Albert?
Obviously, whatever they funding they decide on, it cannot at any time impinge on their independence.
I think that's the issue.
Because they are actually, you know, acting as a court.
So, Honourable Member, do you hear the point that Honourable Albert has made? That we wouldn't want it to impinge on their independence in actually addressing the issues at the tribunal. The whole purpose of the tribunal to make it more accessible than the courts are, okay? Secondly, to make it faster. So it is, I think we should know that as the committee will want to know that we, when they have developed these options, they need to return to the committee. Don't you think so? Right. Now, marketing strategy. Good governance and internal control. I think we want to welcome the fact that the minister has appointed a full-time member to focus on its operational and strategic processes. Right, the National Credit Regulator. Facilitating broad-based economic and participation. Creating a fair regulatory environment. And then you've got a point here. The National Credit Regulator falls within the Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division. Strategic plan. I think we've been through this so many times that the bullets. Let's look at the 2015-16 year. Programs which it will do its work as mandated. It's got a budget. National Credit Act was amended then, etc. They have received additional funding, but they note this is in line with the committee's recommendation, and I think that's very important. You will recall that last year, or maybe not all of you were here, but I mean, last year we did ask for more funds for this work, and in fact they were given, and that's great. We note that. Honourable Kalako.
Sorry for taking you back on companies regular, which I think it must go to, we must have this on recommendations on the issue around the chairperson when we conclude. Because his reply to me was the government to say that he submitted his claims in accordance with the policy guidelines with regard to claims led by the other institutions. So, because he was not he was not coming here whether this, and he said this was agreed and the department was informed. So I think there must be, in the entities, I think there must be a clear from the department guidelines for those who serve in these agencies, how much they must clean per hour per time. There must be a policy on it. It can't just be general. Because it's going to put us into this thing.
Honourable Kalapa, I think there are two things then, as you say, the policy. But the other issue is, even the Auditor General refers to the number of occasions the systems are not in place. It's not that when systems are not in place, everyone is corrupt. But because you've got nothing in place, it's so much easier to do things the wrong way. So these systems were not in place. And to talk of relying on a camera only, I mean, that is the point I made. What did you do before the cameras came? You had a system in place. And I think we ought to note that. The importance of having robust systems and that the governance thereof. That is why we welcome the fact that the minister has now put in place somebody full-time to do this sort of thing because it was not in place before. So let us capture those points so that we take it to conclusion and recommendations. Okay, the National Credit Regulator, we note that we did ask for this. It has improved. The largest share they give it to that is budgeted for improving the operational, the enhancing the quality and accuracy of Credit Bureau. And I think the importance of that sentence of Credit Bureau information, there were so many inaccuracies, and this led to people not being able to collect jobs. So that's a very important point. Key issues, the ballooning of operational expenditure in personnel and admin costs. It predicts an annual increase of 8%. The new legislation created the establishment of additional posts. So that is counted for. And then you've got additional funds. The committee would like to inquire whether the additional funds requested have been received. Funds have been received. If not, what would be the impact? And should the money not be committed? Now the point is, the commissioner did make a comment. She did. The CEO, the CFO did indicate what they would do is do things differently. So you can't just leave it there. We made this inquiry and they said no. They appreciated there was a constraint on funds. However, they would review how they were delivering their services to try and address the lack of funding. But for us, we need to make a position here. Do we think the NCR is important? You see? And do we think they should get more funds? And for what purpose? So that we factor that into the NTEF. The total cost of credit. What I think was very helpful with the NCR for the first time, it indicated that it was having a very constructive operational relationship with Treasury. And that this was working very well for the first time. The NCR position on shortfalls. Committee would like to inquire, considering addressing and for this practice is receiving the... Currently the NCR is completing the analysis of the matter. So maybe what we could do in that regard is to also, when it comes time to the annual report, we've called them back to get a report on, a status report on that. Credit provided against retirement. Access to credit at high cost. The role of the NCR is to ensure that consumers are informed about the cost of credit. The committee inquired about the role of the NCR to ensure compliance when this lending occurs. Right. Then the National Metrology. We nearly finished for those looking at the time, 25 past 10. The National Metrology is performing a very important point, work. The MESA consists of four technical divisions. It's a very technical, very... The only thing is it does affect people's lives. You know, and that's the reality. So we mustn't just avoid it. We must, I think, bring it home to people. These divisions are supported by two cross-cutting divisions, research, technology, and technical infrastructure. What we noted there in the oversight, Comrade Honourable Nkongi, you may recall, when we were there, is they made it a point to share with us that there would be a loss of institutional continuity, of institutional knowledge. It's all captured in this person, pointing to one chap there. And he's leaving. He's leaving, you know. Now, and we heard this on two or three occasions. That person's got all the knowledge, and he's leaving. Now, we need to address that. We can't wait to address it on the eve of his or her departure. They did indicate they would probably call the person in for consultancy purposes, but my own view is they should have addressed it a lot earlier. Why wait until the person has got 3 months left? So we may just note that there is a need to ensure that institutional knowledge doesn't disappear when somebody leaves the entity, whether through retirement or what. Yes, Honourable Gondi.
Do you call it institutional knowledge or institutional memory?
Well, it's both your institutional memory, yes, and also the certain knowledge that you have. They want a deck down for everything, but they want a company else on the governance for the memory. So we may want to just, I don't think it's too semantic, we could just unpack that. You're looking tired, Mr. Herman. Strategic plan. NAMESA, right. nearly 20 years.
I think the other thing is that which I think we might go to recommendations.
Yeah.
At the end. I don't know how the department looks into funding minister, because the major complaint was insufficient funding and compared with other countries. And to me, this is one of the engines for our manufacturing development in the country. And if it's not funded, we're going to be in problems, because they were complaining that they sometimes rely or overwhelmed by big business sectors in this area. So as a government, I think we have to look at that.
Now, can we notify within the bodies? Because it is supported also by the oversight, I'm sure if you check that there as well. And I think that relates to also their role in addressing value addition, which today is a priority of government, you know. So we need to know that given that this is a priority, this is their role, we need to fund them accordingly. Enhancing, you've got that there, manufacturing, higher learning, the national regulator for compulsory specs. We dealt a lot with that one way or the other. I'm sure the Honourable Max Sisson was here, he'd be raising the motor car. And then I know the Honourable Nkongi is here, there was the generator issue as well. But they are addressing these issues. That tells us that when we do make statements, they are taken up seriously. Strategic plan on page 20. Yes, the inform and educate our stakeholders about NDRS. They are now coming on to the TV. Are they also addressing their own professional, you know, stakeholders in industry? The key issues, budgetary considerations during its deliberations. Because they made it clear that the compensation bill had gone up. Let me see if we can find that. With respect to the increase, informed the committee, 17-18, so come way away, okay, informed the committee that the reduction in the baseline was only for 2 years. National Treasury has confirmed the budget is in line with the new baseline. So let's go back a bit. Just two sentences back. The committee would like to inquire as to the reason for the fluctuation over the MTF period, as well as the sharp increase in the compensation budget. Compensation refers to personnel, human resources. With respect to that, inform that the reduction in the baseline was only for 2 years. And the reason for that, to in layman's terms, when we talk about complying with Treasury's new baseline, is to confirm or work within the budget constraint that National Treasury has projected. One, the projected increase was associated with the appointment of new senior staff, as well as the implementation of settlement agreements agreed to in organized labor. You know, when I see this here, settlement agreements with organized labor, it tells me they had a problem. Otherwise, you don't have a settlement. Now, did anyone ask that question? You see, I mean, if you've got these huge settlement agreements, it's like Parliament, when we have our laws challenged, there's a legal cost to all of that. We may just inquire, Mr. Herman's, just about that. What was the cost of that? These settlement agreements relate to new grading positions, which was undertaken by Deloitte. You see, that's a positive issue, that people were saying they were being underpaid for the work they were doing. Say they were upgraded and they were needed an upgrade in salary. So it may not have been a major labor dispute, but it just was proactive or reactive. Okay. Right, the progress with respect to letters of authority. There, the committee is concerned that no measure has been put in place to address this, etc. With respect to LOA, letters of authority, the NCR are NRCS informed the committee that once an application is received, it was registered, checked, all the necessary docs were submitted, and that payment was received. At the completion of the application, is forwarded to a technical team to evaluate that. These reports relate to test reports and to see whether they are conforming to the compulsory specs. The NCR informed the committee it's a lengthy process dependent on a number of tests which must be complied with. One associated with short-term solutions, the other with medium. It started with surveillance inspectors. So what are we dealing with here? These letters of authority. The committee was concerned that no measures have been put in place to address this. No measures. Now, these letters of authority are so critical to their work. Then it must be done. You can't leave it. So just hear from them now this next week, what has happened? Have they got these letters of authority in order now? They've got a risk-based, etc. And it's only in a pilot project. Just ask them how that pilot project is doing. Processing of approvals. I think just get all of that. The levy, some of you may have read the Auditor General's preliminary report. It was because of the levies not being able to be accounted for that they got a qualification there. The NITS annually consults with industry and agrees on increases to tariff structures. And this is then issued through a ministerial proclamation. Now, all we've done, just to recap, and we're going to go to the ambassador now on a go-up, is you've highlighted some of the issues that should be in, but we've not taken a political decision on anything as yet. Right. Ambassador, will you please address this a go-up? And I think the AGOA is right at the beginning, or it's not on page 4. Page 4 at the bottom of the page. Ambassador Ishmael, you was in the World Trade, first as on the official side, and then as ambassador for probably about 8 years, was it, or more?
4 years,
yeah. The minister will brief the committee at the conclusion of this process. With respect to the United States African growth, the negotiation is ongoing. What is the status of the negotiation as we sit here?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think perhaps I'll give you a quick summary of where we are as we speak today, and then if you can discuss the background to the issues and how they arose. Well, if I can summarize the current status of the ongoing discussions with the United States on AGOA, I think I can say that there's the good news, not so good news, and the bad news. The good news, Honorable Chair, is that there is a bill on AGOA which has seen the light of day in the U.S. Congress and had been through the committees in Senate, the Senate Finance Committee, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and the House Ways and Means Committee. And the bill has granted an extension of AGOA for a further 10 years. The committee, well, the bill that has gone through the committees has granted a 10-year extension.
That's the good news.
It's also good news, of course, very important for us that South Africa has been included in the bill for that 10-year period. So that's the good news. The not so good news, Madam Chair, is that the bill has not completely passed through the Congress, the congressional process. It still has to come before the floor of the full Congress for voting. And thereafter, of course, it goes to the president for signature. So it hasn't gone through its full course. There's still the possibility, although, say, a diminishing possibility, that amendments could still arise, you know, when the bill comes before the floor for voting. And in any event, members may make statements during that period. So that's good news. The not so good news is that the bill, as I said, has not gone through the Congress and could still be amended. Could still be amended. And that amendment could say something about South Africa limiting its current period of inclusion in AGOA, because, of course, in the committees that the bill went through, such amendments were put forward. There was one amendment, at least, that Senator Isaacson put forward to limit the period for which South Africa was included to 3 years. But that that amendment did not succeed in the Senate Finance Committee. But of course, that possibility, the possibility of it re-emerging, still exists. The not so good news too is that in the current draft of the bill, which is likely to be passed in the Congress, there is what they call an out-of-cycle review, which will determine, which will identify countries that the United States has some trade and investment concerns with, and those countries could be, their concessions could be limited in some way, or in the work case, their eligibility in a goal could be withdrawn. And the not so good news, of course, that South Africa has been named in this provision of the bill as the country that has to be go through this process of out-of-cycle review within 30 days after the enactment of the bill. That's the not so good news. The bad news is that when you read the bill as it is, and I've just been reading it as we're sitting here, there are a number of provisions in this bill which create what I call a structural attrition between countries who will be or are eligible for a beneficiary of the power, because the bill throughout, you know, the provisions of the bill, it calls for a continuous review of the eligibility of those countries, providing for, as I said just now, out-of-cycle reviews, which could be brought into effect at any time. There are also provisions in the bill which, as I also indicated to the USTR, that build into the bill a trajectory of reciprocity. So, as you know, AGOA is a preferential arrangement, one-way preferential arrangement, but built into the bill are provisions to begin to initiate free trade agreements between the United States and AGOA-eligible countries. So that's the bad news. It is bad news that in this bill, although the bill provides for the continuation or the extension of AGOA for a full 10-year period, it does not create the necessary certainty and stability that businesses not only in South Africa but across the continent, the sub-Saharan continent, require for these preferences to be used in a manner which attract the necessary investment and helps to build industrialization, because throughout the bill there are threats for the transition of the countries from, you know, provincial regime towards a reciprocal regime where those preferences will then be have to be paid for by reciprocal preferences for the United States in the African market. So
So those are the three features of the and the bill that I think is a very, very short summary, Madam Day, of where we currently are, but I could give you a bit more background and talk a bit about some of the current issues that South Africa faces as we continue our dialogue with the United States.
My concern at the moment is a time constraint. We would have finished at 10:30, max 11 o'clock. Now I'm looking at the time, it's 10:45, you see. Now I really would want to, us to go to the AGOA, because when is the deadline before we respond? When is the deadline? When is it going onto the floor in Congress?
Madam Chair, there are many watches for you at Congress, and not any of them can tell you with any precision exactly when the bill will fall before the Congress floor. And the reasons for that are the huge complexity in the current process, because this bill is only one of several other much more weighty, politically important bills that are going through the U.S. Congress on trade. And those include Trade Promotion Authority, the TPP, which is the Transatlantic Partnership Agreement, and several others. And so it's not very clear, although, as we know, the bill has to be reenacted before the end of September, when the current bill will expire. And it is the intention of the U.S. Congress to take those other trade bills through the Congress, at least by the time of the U.S. Of the modern summer, which is by the end of July. But is anybody's guess at this stage when AGOA will be enacted? It could be within weeks, that is the next 3 or 4 weeks, or it could be a bit longer than that.
Right, thank you very much. Just to get so, gave us an idea of what that deadline is, which would mean it would assist us in, could we accommodate it on the schedule, you know, for a longer time, because I think the AGOA is an important agreement, and it is something we need. I'm talking Mr. Herman has just stepped outside, but let me just look at the program here. You know, we have to be out of this budget process within the next 2 weeks, 10 days. And so what we're doing is the budget itself is on the 25th. So the question is, do we have time to wait for this, for the budget input? We're not going to. So we may have to address it separately, that's what I'm saying. If we address it separately, we get this information, we acknowledge that we would like it to be passed, and that we would have to await the decision taken by the U.S. Congress. That's exactly where we are. Because it could be another 2 months, you see, so we don't want to be in limbo. Honourable Wood.
Chair, I agree with you. It's important that this thing, which the Ambassador said he can do for us.
Mm.
I think let's check time with and his availability, so that we can have a thorough briefing and get into discussion separately. Yeah, on his own, because at the end of the day, you know, we might be the people who will have also to rectify it, so to make any input to it before it is rectified by Parliament.
I agree with you. You see, we do want this input from the Ambassador, but it's the timing, that's my problem. And I'm looking here in our schedule where there's a possibility, but then Mr. Hermans will confirm that. There is opportunity on the 10th of June, which by then you should have got somewhere with AGOA, when the minister, or, you know, it's Wednesday, the minister will be here, but we'll be dealing with the free trade agreement, the tripartite, but also the WTO. So we'll be dealing with trade issues and agreements. So let's try and look at the 10th of June, because before the end of May is really tight because of the budget process, you see. So I want to thank you, and maybe we can ask you, Ambassador, if something comes up that you could let us have in writing, you know, an update from time to time, we could at least fact it into the committee work. So I'd like to thank you, and I'd like to thank you for being patient and waiting, if that's all right. Thank you. I want us to just, we've done a bill again, so where are we on the budget? Honourable Hilders?
I misunderstood you. Are we not even going to be able to engage with the ambassador for 10 minutes? No.
The thing is, only a Goa issue, nothing has really changed. That is the point. And that is why I asked, when is it actually going to Congress? When is it going to Congress? Because right now, we've given them an offer, an alternative offer, South Africa. But we don't know.
I feel like we've wasted the ambassador's time because everything he told us was valuable in the newspapers. The point was to have engagements about how we got to that position and where to from here.
Well, unfortunately, the committee doesn't operate through the media. That could be changed, but you know, I for one, am not prepared to take everything at face value Irish. That would be a dangerous precedent for us to say, we've got it all from media. By the way, we won't be checking the budget. It's in the Cape Times, the other ones in the Business Day, and we'll just take a decision on what the media have written. I don't think you meant that, though, so let me not be facetious about this.
No, I didn't mean that at all. The point is we're not taking it. You know, the news, we've got the news already. The point was to have engagements about it. And that wasn't an engagement.
No, the point was not an engagement. It was to get an official update. The minister's out of the country, and the ambassador, Ishmael, deals with that. So we needed an official statement to go into the budget. That's what I'm saying. We couldn't just leave it here the way it currently reflected about a Goa, where we simply say that with respect to the United States, growth, the negotiation is ongoing. We can now actually give a status report. This is where it is as we go through the budget itself. If we get anything dramatic in the next week, we'll still have a budget open. All right. Honourable Elders?
Madam Chair, we will then engage in future on the Goa,
yes.
Because that is very, very important, and we need to engage with it in depth.
That's certainly the where we're going. If we knew that, frankly, it's going to the House tomorrow. But it's not. You've heard what the ambassador has said. Could be another month. You see? When we do have that finality, I do want the ambassador to come here and engage. And if he hadn't been based in Cape Town, we wouldn't have called him across. They wouldn't have called him from Pretoria. He happens to be around. So that is why we asked him to come in. We do want to engage on it when you've gone to an extent. But clearly we have not got there. We have absolutely not got there. So I want to just address two things. Yes, Honourable Elders, was that now? In terms of the budget, the committee secretary will address the dates that we're doing what on. When is our next meeting for that? Because I'm still waiting for the program from Denver. No, that's not. And you've taken it back. So what is it? On the 7th of May, consideration of reports on transfer pricing and budget vote. Then we will have longer. If anything has changed with the girl by then, we can put it in. The next meeting on the budget will be on the 12th. And if that on the 12th, we've got another meeting, or is that the last meeting? On Wednesday the 13th, we're doing a formal consideration of it. So if before the 13th of May we get information, we will address it. Okay? So that's the status of the budget vote with a number of changes that we have requested. I'm asking the committee members to please discuss this with their own parties, what is in here, plus the inclusions we've added, and to be ready to come back with some positions for the conclusion and for the recommendations as parties. All right? Is that addressed then? Fine. With respect to the transfer pricing, we would like members to regard this as a rolling draft. allow you to read it, analyze it, and to be able to come back, keep on taking my program, to be able to come back on, again, the 7th of May, a Tuesday. But the problem we're having is that it's very little time. It's only an hour, just over an hour. So we would like everything you've done that you want to add as a party to be in electronic form, and we'll get it printed. So each party will send theirs through, their respective whip, or in the case of some of the other parties, through the leader of that group. That's yourself, Honourable Albert, and also Honourable Hilders, and these inform Professor Timang and the EFF as well about that. So we hope we'll get that from you. Doesn't have to be in perfect English, just the issue, so that we move on from there. Okay, that's the budget. When the transfer pricing, it's going to ensure that it's contextualized, because what we're not wanting to do is to repeat what we're going to do in the Finance Committee. And we need to be, make members aware that the practice in Parliament is that committees have a mandate. That mandate arises from the minister, either the ministry, the department that they are exercising oversight on, or in the case of standing committees, a lot broader than that. In our case, we're a portfolio committee. And that means that whatever is in DPI's mandate and the legislation we have passed does have a relationship to what we're doing. So no, we're not going to call specifically on everything in the MDR. We'll do that when we get to the Finance Committee. But we can call on those issues that are cross-cutting into the BBBE, into the SIPC, and into the board-based Black Economic Empowerment. And there are lots of those that are cross-cutting. With reference to the taxation issues, we will note the relationship that taxation has in the higher value addition and the impact it has on the funds being available for wages and improvements and workers' conditions and things like that. So I hope that that is quite clear as you go through this report. We have told Honourable Froelich, the Chair of Chairs, that we're facing a lot of pressure here with time. With time. Okay. So if anyone wants to come with something else, please let us know through Mr. Hermans. And Ambassador, I just want to reiterate, should you get anything before the 7th of May, if you can put anything, update anything, please let us know so that we can factor that lot in. And the last possible date for that would be the 12th of May. So anything that emerges from there. Thank you. On that note, with everyone with the new program, etc., we then going to adjourn this meeting until the 7th of May, 8:30, to be confirmed the venue, to 9:45. To 9:45. The 7th of May is a Thursday. All right. Are we all agreed on that? Thank you. Right. We're all workers, so happy workers' day for tomorrow. Ambassador, can you just come with us on that issue here? You see the Figueroa thing, it worries me what you did. And the structural, I think you said,